This session was recorded at Journey Underground, a recovery ministry of Journey Christian Church in Fairbanks, Alaska.
Yeah, now it's on. Yeah. I tell you what, when my wife and I walked in the atmosphere of drugs and alcohol, when that just ruled our lives, I tell you what, madness. It was madness, you know. We spent a whole night one time out in the front yard, desperately trying to kill the garden hose. That's good. I think we're the only couple in Fairbanks that attempted to swim the Steese Highway. Yes. Yeah. And we would have made it if it wasn't for the snowplows, I'm telling you. That's what you get for my microphone messing up on me, right? So, anybody enjoying the fall rain? We've been liking that. We like that. I don't know. We enjoy it. When I look out the front door and see it's raining out, I come running in and I tell Glenna, the forecast today is 100% chance of snuggling. Yes! So we had that 24-hour weather channel that we have out here in Fairbanks. We had something really similar when I was growing up. It was called the window. I don't know what's gotten into me. I've got all these things. All right, one more. So the guy that invented the umbrella, all right, he was going to call it the Brella, but he hesitated. Stupid. So dumb. What are you going to name it? Brella. All right, we're starting a new series tonight. It's going to be Lessons in the Wilderness, and let me just jump right in here. No more joking around, man, you know. This is Exodus 15, verse 22. And just really listen tonight for the Lord. In fact, let me pray for you. Let me pray for me. Lord, I just pray that your Spirit would be at work in our hearts tonight, and you would lead us through your word and speak to us what we need to hear. Let us all bring something home. Let us bring home a new trust in you, a new faith in what you're doing in our lives that we couldn't do for ourselves. In Jesus' name, amen. It says, then Moses led the people of Israel away from the Red Sea, and they moved out into the desert of Shur. They traveled in this desert for 3 days without finding any water. When they came to the oasis of Marah, the water was too bitter to drink. So they called the place Marah, which means bitter. Then the people complained and turned against Moses. What are we going to drink? They demanded. So Moses cried out to the Lord for help, and the Lord showed him a piece of wood. And Moses threw it into the water, and this made the water good to drink. It was there at Marah that the Lord set before them the following decree as a standard to test their faithfulness to him. He said, if you'll listen carefully to the voice of the Lord your God, do what is right in his sight, obeying his commands, keeping all his decrees, then I will not make you suffer any of the diseases I sent out on the Egyptians, for I am the Lord who heals you. And after leaving Marah, the Israelites traveled on to the oasis of Elim, where they found 12 springs and 70 palm trees, and they camped there beside the water. So basically, you know, here's the scene. Israel were slaves for 400 years. Could you imagine, like, your family being in slavery for 400 years? So that puts us back into, like, the 1600s right now, if your family were slaves since then, and what that would be like. So he leads them out through Moses. They're trapped between the Red Sea and Pharaoh's armies. And they're crying out, like, we're in distress. Right, they're in a really bad situation, obviously, and they cry out to God. He parts the Red Sea with a miracle, and they march through the Red Sea, and as they get through it, then God destroys their enemies. They sing a mighty song, 18 verses long kind of song, right? It's in here, huge celebration. Could you imagine what that would be like? I've been in situations before where I thought I was going to die. and what comes over you when it didn't happen, like I did not die, it's absolutely exhilarating. And so they celebrated and they sang a song, had great joy. Then they go into the desert, and for 3 days, they walk, no water. For you survival experts, how many days can we go without water? Right? So they're right there. They're right there. I can only go about 45 minutes. So they see the water, they come to the water, and it's bitter. They can't drink it. They cry out. They grumble. They demand. They're in a bad situation. And God shows Moses a tree. He cuts it down, throws it in the water. The water becomes sweet, right? And they're satisfied. And they celebrate. God then, as we just read, leads them to an oasis where they have a break. If you read on, they go on from there, and now no food. And they cry out. And then God gives them a banquet in the desert. You guys see a pattern going on? I always look for patterns. I love to see this kind of stuff. It is a very, very basic principle for us as sons and daughters of God to know that God uses the desert and the wilderness of our lives. He uses it as a training ground, as a proving ground, as a testing ground for us, to train us as his children. He is revealing in us and working out of us our natural inclination to live by sight and not by faith. Because the people of God, the mighty sons and daughters of God, we live by faith and not by sight. And to be able to do that, we have to be trained. This is a real big deal. You think God plays peekaboo with us? You see what he's doing here in this story? This back and forth thing? This rhythm he's got in his training with them? Watch what he's doing, how he's working. They are newborn children brought out of slavery, newborns. And here he is, right? I love watching my wife with her little grandkids, little grandbabies. And just see the heart of God here. And she'll get their little face, and she'll go, peekaboo. And then she'll hide. Peekaboo, right? She does this, peekaboo, right? When I do it, they just start crying, right? No matter what. Make it go away, whatever that is. Peekaboo is a very profound. It is, when you study it, it's actually super, super good for the development of a child. And this is what we're seeing here. God's training them. When you look up the game Peekaboo and its benefits, it teaches a child a very important lesson, and it's called object permanence. And what it teaches them is, even though they cannot see, the person's still there. It teaches them that even though they can't see, they're still there. And it teaches them also pattern recognition, which is super, super important. In fact, it's so fun to watch my wife play this game, because they get to the point where when she's behind her hands, they're like bursting with anticipation and joy of what's coming. You guys see what I mean? It's just a powerful thing to see. In fact, their joy is so intense because they know what's behind those hands. They know it's going to be something good. They know mom's coming back out, and it's going to be a surprise. And it's so fun to watch their little face just bursting, ready to just start laughing. It's super fun to watch. And what they're doing when she's behind those hands is they're exercising faith. Pretty cool stuff. One of the most important skills that we learn as kids, growing up, babies, toddlers, we talked about this in our recovery concepts And Jesse was our main focus. Yeah, Jesse. I love Jesse. I do. I love you, Jesse. You are awesome. And one of the things that we have to learn that's super, super important that we don't all get it, but is a thing called self-regulation. We learn to self-regulate. That is, we're able to bring ourselves back to joy on our own. We learn to do this. And this isn't a skill that you just develop. I mean, it has to be trained into you. You have to have the right stuff, right, to be able to do it. In fact, is there anyone here working the faster scale that wouldn't have a problem saying they're on the faster scale, they're working it? Anybody? I see a little, I don't know if I'm breaking some rule. You're not supposed to say that, but I'm working the faster scale. I love the faster scale. It's part of the Genesis process. And the faster scale, the whole premise is that you begin in a place of being centered. Like you're breathing from your whole lung, like your entire lung. You know, when a person's in survival mode, they're just breathing from the top part of their lungs. Like, you know, when you're in an emergency, you're just barely breathing from way up here. And that's why it's so important to breathe from your whole lung. Like get centered, let your feet get heavy. Stand like a sandbag, become present. You know, we have all these things that we can do to become present in the moment. But the faster scale is built on being able to self-regulate, come back to center, stay in recovery. I was watching a thing called real-time neurofeedback. Super cool stuff. They're doing some amazing work with this, and they actually can hook a person's brain up, like MRI stuff, hook a person's brain up, and they make this game out of it, basically. And they took, like, a crack addict, put him on this MRI. They also took a smoker, put him on there, and got their little, you know, brain images, and they had these little graphs. Then they triggered them, right, through, like, an image or someone using or whatever. Bam, and it showed that graph just go skyrocket. Their brain just boom. In the red, like this one right side graph just jumped. It was so cool to watch this, right? And the person had to develop their own way. The whole game was through their own breathing, through their own methods. Like they gave them some tips, how your visualization in your mind. But the goal of the game was to bring that thing down on your own while you're being triggered in the middle of this rant, rant, rant. And the guy was sitting there concentrating. He was watching this chart. And being able to see it really helped him. And that dude, right in the middle of being triggered, brought that thing all the way down. And when he got it right down to where it was before, the thing went boom, you know, and like two thumbs up. And he was like, yeah, you know, who's the boss? Who's the boss? And I was just like in tears, like, yeah, you're the boss. You're the boss. Like, you rock. This is so cool. I mean, that is super cool, guys. Now, this dude can walk around, and where before he just, you know, was subject to all this, I'm being triggered and running and freaking out. Now he's seeing what's going on. He's developing this ability to quiet his own body, bring it right back home. Man, that's bad. That is so cool. So when we're born, we automatically, this is all subconscious too, we look for, it's funny, if you guys saw my notes, I have a crying baby I drew on my notes. That's just my note. Like, that's my next thing. So I'm glad I know what that means. Just thought I'd share that. A little behind the scenes, underground information. So when we're babies, we automatically look for an external regulator. Something outside of me to help me regulate my pain, my emotions, pleasure, the intensity of being. I look for it outside of me because I don't have it in me. So I cry, wah, right? Just cry out. That's why my note had a crying baby. Wah, right there, I just did it, okay? And so what happens is you cry out and then the authority figure, your caregiver, your parent comes running over, searches out the need. Are you hurt? Are you hungry? Are you wet? What do you need? Meets the need. And then guess what? The baby returns to joy. And then that equals trust. And he learns this. Super big deal. Doesn't learn trust up here. Doesn't even have language. He learns trust here. He had the experience of trust. Right? And this is the pattern. Returning to joy and trust. Hey guys, I tell you what, when we're fetuses and we're little babies, the first thing we learn is how to receive. If you don't know how to receive, we're not going to get very far. So when we're brought into the Christian world, it's all about, you know, here, let me hand you a pile of brochures to go handing out and go knock on doors and me go do, you know, easy with that. First, you need to know who you are. Take it easy. You need to soak in the love of God. You need to get your roots down deep into God. Be in his nursery for a while. Let him feed you some of that supernatural milk till your bones grow, get strong. Then when you stand up, a transformed life transforms lives. It's not a religious, annoying person. It is a beam of light, right? This is what we're after here. So most of our wounds are pre-verbal, a lot of them. You don't have language for them. You don't know how they are, why they are. They're there. And this is where me and Jesse were working together because Jesse rocks. I'm going to get a shirt that says Jesse rocks. Some of us didn't get the goodies. And I can admit that. I mean, I didn't get the goodies, right? Some of us here didn't get the goodies. And the goodies, I mean, you know, that time when, you know, mom's holding you, dad's gazing in, these powerful faces. Your source is staring at you. Ah, look. His eyelashes are perfect. His little face. That's my son. Look at my son, right? Your eyesight when you're a little baby goes about this far. Isn't that amazing? And you're just staring at source. Where I come from is beholding me with intense joy, just basking in the love. And this is where that deep love affair with mom and dad begins, basking in that gaze, super important. And eventually that whole external regulator beacon that's searching for a way to regulate shuts off because I internalize it. And then I start saying things like, I can do it myself. I can do it. Give me my sock. I got it. Like, just let me free. I can do this. I am able. Like, I've got this stuff in here now. Boom, I've received it. Good time. That's awesome. Attachment pain. Studies have been done. Attachment pain is the deepest pain we can feel as human beings. Wow. It truly is. We were fans of that show called The Alone Show, History Channel. I was driving all my friends away talking about it so much. And they're all running from me. Come here. Episode 2 just came out. Where you going? We watched these people out there that were survival experts that just were so into it, knew every trick. But when they got out there, they got their little shelter set up. And then Alone hit. I mean, they would just have these complete meltdowns that were so fun to watch. I mean, they were losing it. I mean, they were losing it. Guys would walk away from $500,000 like, I must see my wife's face. I don't care about the money. I don't care about any of it. My son, his birthday is next week, and I will be there. And they were just bawling. You know, it was just so powerful to see the attachment, those needs. That is the driver, guys. It's powerful. We are designed for connection and attachment at a very deep level. We need it. So they did a lot of studies on monkeys, right? I think the only thing tested more than the monkey would be the college student, maybe. I'm not sure. But they did some testing on monkey society. And long story short, they tested their attachment, like these receptors and stuff. And for a monkey to be at the lowest level of monkey society means that he had to be beat up by all the other levels to get to the bottom. So there's all the bottom level of monkey society. And so then they introduced like drugs into the equation, cocaine, stuff like that. Guess which monkeys instantly were addicted? The lower level monkeys. Because they had these deep attachment wounds from all their peers all the way to the top. And in fact, to get the guys on the top to be addicted, they had to force them, like force feed them. And I mean, I'm like, who's doing these experiments, you know? They took the monkeys from the higher monkey society and they put them down at the bottom and they created that whole experience for them. And then they became susceptible to addiction with the drugs they introduced, right? All of this was brought on by their experience in relationships, all of it. Important to know. This is why the small group, the 12-step group, the AA groups, all of these are so powerful, because here you have a group of people that are glad to see you. And even though I'm busted up and I'm mangled and I've got all these weird problems, they're glad to see me. Did you know that your brain knows in a microsecond if someone's glad to see you or not? Picks up on it super fast. And that joyful experience of someone coming into a room and seeing joy in your presence, that's healing. That's super healing. Well, we need that. Super powerful. So we come into these groups, having these joyful attachments are super, super healing. And, you know, make another point here. Did you know that Jesus heals attachment wounds like no other? Can't explain it. Can't tell you the breakdown. Can't put that up on the board. He just can do it. And we see this often where someone like loses a grandmother and they're in the hospital grieving over her death. And God shows them that everything that they loved about her, he is. He is those very things. And he just has this way of being loved to you and being those very things. I have a very interesting devotional life, and I definitely will spend time under God's face, seeing his joyful face just shining over me and just loving being with me and me loving being with him. It's just a wonderful time I have. Interesting that God would take these people that came out of slavery and begin training them. God led them to their need to show them he's the one that's going to meet it. He led them to these places to show them, I'm the one. You cry out. You see the pattern. They cry out. He meets a need. They celebrate. They write a song. They have a need. They cry out. He meets the need. They celebrate. Do you see this? Returning to joy. Returning to joy. Returning to joy. And then as the lessons get harder, the time gets longer, they remember the songs. They learn how to internalize the joy. So to take a little bit of a turn, tell you that as the sons and daughters of God, we cannot miss in this story, it's right here in every story, that as you are a child of God in pursuit of your freedom, in pursuit of your promised land, all hell will break loose after you. All hell will break loose. Pharaoh and his armies, remember, they're led by a guy, Moses, who it was illegal for him to even be alive. when he was a baby, the law was kill all of them. And he lived to lead these people. Pharaoh's army after the children of Israel was Satan's attempt to stop these mighty people of God. I am on a spiritual journey as well as you are. I wonder how many times the enemy has attempted to take your life, like just take your life, and how many times you have been saved. Adam and Eve show up. Who just landed on planet Earth? The sons and daughters of God. Those are some powerful people, guys, as you are. And who shows up on the scene? Satan himself does his job. Satan himself does his job. Let me show you this one passage here. I won't go into the history of it, and feel free to study this. Matthew chapter 2, verse 16. Herod was furious when he realized that the wise man had outwitted him. He sent soldiers to kill all the boys in and around Bethlehem who were 2 years old and under, based on the wise men's report of the star's first appearance. It goes on to talk about the prophecy. Who was behind such a brutal attack, right? I know Jesus is in there somewhere. Kill all of them, and we might get him. We'll probably get him. This was his method, brutal method. Guys, if you're the sons and daughters of God, it's on. The challenge is on. You will be challenged. And you see how he paints with a broad stroke, like kill all of them, maybe I'll probably get him. I open a liquor store on this corner, and I'll probably get him. Because I know a lot of them come from those kinds of families. Have drug dealer dude planted right there, I'll probably get those two blocks for sure. And then I'll get that one annoying one that's meant to do something powerful. Let's just stop them. Let's have some websites planted. Let's do all this work, and we're gonna paint with a broad brush, and we're gonna sweep through, and we're gonna get them. Like, this is how we're gonna get them, right? I mean, I see this. That's what I see in here. And Jesus, as the Son of God, was to be stopped at all costs. And let me just make a point here too. This is kind of interesting to me. Is that Jesus saved mankind in so many ways. Like, I don't know how you see it, how many ways he saved us. You know, one of the ways he saved us, well, it says in Colossians that he reconciled things on earth and in heaven. You ever think about that? In heaven? Like, I thought they were all, everything was perfect, everything was good. How did he reconcile things in heaven and on earth? Well, before we talked about there being a war in heaven, right? And that war comes from a word where we get the word politics. This war in heaven was a campaign against God, where Satan basically has this campaign smear against God and his character in heaven. And it was so convincing, a third of the angels fell. This is what it says. A third of the angels fell for it. That's a pretty big deal. In fact, if you want to know what his methods were, I think we can gather some of it from reading the book of Job. We can gather some of it by looking at the temptation of Adam and Eve, of how his methods are to get you to not trust God in his character, his goodness, accusing God of being selfish himself, these kinds of things. And it was a campaign. So let's just give it a quick example. Some people aren't interested in this kind of stuff. I think it's very interesting. But let's just say that Kaylin comes along and says, pulls Abby aside and says, hey, Abby, did you know that Glenna is stealing sound equipment from the sound equipment room? Just want you to know what's going on. Like Glenn is stealing from the sound equipment. And Abby is so shocked that she falls off the wall back there, right? So let's just say that was the accusation and it got spread around here. We're all hearing this. Did you know Glenn is stealing from over there? This is like a campaign smear. So what should Glenna do? She should kill Kalen, right? That's what people say. Why didn't God just kill Satan? Just kill him. Well, that's not really an answer. That's not the character of God. It's not what we see. So, what if Glenna came up here behind a microphone and said, announcement, I want you guys to know I'm not stealing sound equipment. Then it would all be settled, right? Some people might believe her. Go, well, she said she wasn't. I mean, God could say what Satan said wasn't true. He's coming against my character and my nature, and he's influencing these angels, and they're all falling, and he makes this announcement. But see, that doesn't do the job completely. Her coming up here saying it, right? But if she let it play out, as God does, the cross, guys. And this is such a great study to do. The cross. Remember, we're not just the ones affected by this. Heaven's watching. The cross reveals Satan's true character. What he was really up to. He was trying to kill God. And it revealed it plain and simple. Everyone saw it. And the cross revealed the character of God. He is a God of love and that would rather die than act selfishly. I want you to know he's got your back. He loves you immensely and we could put our weight on him 100%. He's proven it and he's reconciled us on earth and in heaven. Seal the deal. They all know now what's going on. Isn't that crazy? God also saved mankind through Jesus by him being a perfect human being. Right now, there's a perfect human being. Guys, there's a perfect human being right now. It's the idea of as long as there's one panda bear alive, panda bears are not extinct. And I want you to know, guys, there is one perfect human being. He saved mankind in himself by being victorious. And he is reproducing his nature within me and within you. And the very heart of that nature is unselfishness, love. I mean, that's the heart of it, love. I would rather love than be selfish. I would rather die than act selfishly in my own interest. The character and nature of God is love, revealed in the cross. Powerful, powerful stuff. So here, I just want to say this one little warning here that I have in Psalm 81 says, this is God's heart. Oh, that my people would listen to me. This is God who's proven himself. The crossroads of history, is he's proven his character on the cross. He has nothing left to prove. He's done it. And he says, oh, that my people would listen to me. This is his heart for me and you. Oh, that Israel would follow me, walking in my path. How quickly I would then subdue their enemies. How soon my hands would be upon their foes. He says, I would feed you with the finest wheat. I would satisfy you with wild honey from the rock. Wild honey from the rock is making a reference to bees having these incredible honeycombs in these high places where there was rocks, and it was basically unreachable sweetness. And that he would feed you, with unreachable sweetness, you'll attain it. You can have it. Like, this is what he's saying. He's like, man, that they would follow me. Man, that they would listen. So I am learning to depend on him. You're learning to depend on him. We're learning the peekaboo. 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 That's supernatural, guys. So in this passage of him making the bittersweet, is my last few notes here. Remember, they had an expectation of having water, and it was bitter, and he made a point that to throw the tree in, applying the cross, makes things sweet. So before the cross, what was the word of God to you and me? The word of God to you and me was basically the law, like showing me a mirror that I just don't have it. After the cross, it's a mirror showing you, you are his beautiful daughter. You are the mighty sons and daughters of God. Post-cross, that's who we are. And he wants you to see it in his word. He wants to reproduce that in us. The law is like if you took like a little piece of Glenna's DNA and I had it on a little piece of paper, I would have a perfect transcript of Glenna. And you might hand it to me and say, there, you got Glenna. Are you happy? And we have the law. We have a perfect transcript of God. But I wouldn't know her laugh. I wouldn't know her ways. I wouldn't know what she's like over dinner. I wouldn't know the things she loves. And I want you to know that Jesus became the law. He became that DNA transcript and said, this is what it looks like alive. And he's reproducing that in you and me. So, last point. Guys, I'm going to tell you, there's power in studying the word. But what comes to your mind when you hear, study the word, dig into prayer, get into a small group? We might think that's boring. Sometimes it is, guys. I've sat through hundreds of boring services, right? Hundreds, right? Like my behind sore from sitting through boring services. But you do it. I've sat through groups that weren't so interesting. I mean, this might not be super fascinating to you, but we do it. We study the word. We get down on our knees. We pray. We get in these small groups. We confront one another. We love on one another. We see where you're not believing the gospel, that you are free and that you're a son and daughter, and we encourage you in that, right? But it's not always exciting. But Neil Anderson makes this incredible point. He says, you ever know someone that knows how to make dynamite? He's like, you ever actually know someone personally that knows nuclear physics? He said, they're really boring people. He said, but guess what? They know how to make nuclear power. Like the most boring people on the planet know how to make dynamite. Like they know how to make the big booms. Boom, big power. That's interesting. I thought it was a great point. And if you want to know where a lot of this power comes from, talking to Bonnie, check out that keychain over there. Unbelievable accomplishment of every single color in her NA experience and journey. I mean, I'm sure all that wasn't super exciting, huh? Okay. Well, you get down and study the word and you do it. You get down in prayer. You get in these groups. You drag your body to these groups and you come and you do the work. I want you to know something. You experience power. You know how to create power. I'm not out in the front yard trying to kill a garden hose anymore, guys. So this passage says that God will make the bitter sweet. And I just want to close out with saying, what is it that's bitter in your life that God says he'll make it sweet? He can make it sweet. First and foremost, he wants you to find your way home be able to return to joy. And that comes right now, right this moment, by believing in who you are, who he's made you to be. Who's that? The Spirit he gave us cries out, what? Dad. Dad. Abba. That's the first step. You're his son. You're his daughter. That's joy. That's home. That's the first step. You're loved. Thank you.